You're listening to Esprit Radio.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
That's right. Welcome to our neighborhood. Welcome to Black on Black Crime, our point counterpoint program where we talk issues, news. Sometimes we play a game or two, but we don't do crime. If you're not familiar with our program, Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. You can join in on today's topic by calling in or sending your comments in the chat room. With that being said, on with the show.
All right, welcome again to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. We're here. It is Monday, okay? It's our Monday program. If you're not familiar with Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. On today's show, we have biopics. It seems like we have a whole show of biopics. Not too many black on black crimes, but just biopics. We have Finesse, who's going to be in, and Daniel's going to be here. We're going to talk about Jackie Robinson's 42 and Ernie Davis' The Express. There's not really one versus the other, but we're going to talk about the two biopics in our main topic. We have CNN's coverage versus CNN's racial bias coverage. We want to talk about some of the things that John King said while they were looking for somebody in Boston. Whoopi Goldberg, also on this show, talks about The View, and she directs her comedic legend biopic herself from Mobs Mabley. So we have that and a preview of People's, a new movie that's coming out, and entertainment updates and more, or entertainment news updates and more. We have that. Now, if you missed last week's show, had LL Cool J versus James Todd. It was kind of his accidental racist song. We wanted to see the hip-hop version or the actor, James Todd. What was going on with them? We had Trayvon Martin's parent response to Gladys Zimmerman and Jay-Z's response to his trip to Cuba and his new release, Open Letter. Also, you know, we still have that on the board, so since there's been an update to it, I don't know if you guys checked it out. The remix, I should say, with Common on it. The song is still hot, so if you didn't get a chance to hear it, check it out in Archives, Black on Black Crime. We played the last week. You can check us out on iTunes. Check out soulofsyracuse.com/EspritRadio/BOBC. Or send us an email at BOBC, that's Black on Black Crime, at soulofsyracuse.com. If you need some of that information and you need us to give you some of what was going on in the world. All right. Now, before we really kick it off, let's bring in our co-host and partner in crime, Daniel. What's going on, Daniel?
Not much, my brother. What's happening with you?
Not much, man. You've been on a little vacation for a minute, so I just wanted to bring you in early. Make sure we get to yell a little bit.
Thanks for welcoming me back.
Oh, of course, of course. Daniel and I, this is NBA season, so you know we're going to tear it up when it starts getting down to finals time, so I guess we probably should hold out on that. You've been checking out the games?
I said my poor Rockets. Oh, Lord.
I know. I like the Rockets, but I'm still not a Kevin McHale. That old Boston Celtic thing still kind of, I don't know about Kevin McHale, but I like the Rockets, so they're going to have a hard time with Oklahoma City.
It's going to be scary. I think they actually took a quarter off. When I actually turned in into the game, they were down 96-69. Yeah, how do you get beat down like that knowing that you're in the playoffs?
They were down at some point 4 points or something, and then it was 15, like in about 2 minutes. So they went up.
It was an 11-point play.
The Rockets are going to have a rough little moment. And by the way, before we go any farther, I want to just kind of give you some things that happened throughout the week. Since Kai's not here right now, and Kamish is here, but she'll let us know when she's available, and Vanessa's coming in a little bit. But before those guys get in here, this week marks the 10th anniversary of the passing of Nina Simone. We talked about her a lot in the biopic last show. Folks was bashing Zoe Saldana. I'm going to root for her. So this marks the 10th anniversary of Eunice Kathleen Wayman, who is popularly known by her stage name, Nina Simone. She died in her sleep in France at the age of 70. So just wanted to kind of acknowledge Nina Simone's birthday, since we've been talking about her on the show for probably the last five shows with the biopic coming out. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Ginger Howard has become a member of the LPGA. That's the Ladies Professional Golf Association at age 17. She's the youngest ever to do it. She's an African-American Ginger Howard. She's a cutie. But she also has a younger sister who's 16. Her sister, Robbie, is waiting her turn. So going into golf on the ladies' side, Ginger Howard, 17 years old. You got to watch out for her. And also, Sony has announced that After Earth, I think we previewed that movie in the past show, if I remember correctly, the forthcoming sci-fi adventure pick starring Will and Jaden Smith will be released on May 31st. Now, on this show, our main topic is Jackie Robinson's 42 versus Ernie Davis's Express. We're not really comparing those two, but they were some biopics that we're going to talk about. I know, Daniel, you saw the Ernie Davis Express movie, and I know Finesse saw it, so we're going to have to throw that around a little bit later on in the show. It's based on a real-life story of college football star and hero Ernie Davis. It kind of reminded everyone of the movie Brian Song. You remember Brian Song back in the day?
Oh, most definitely.
With,
yeah. Great show.
Yeah. Gail Sayers.
James Song.
Oh, yeah. You got to remember the Billy Dee Williams movies. So, yeah, that's what they were saying. It was kind of like Brian's song. And also on this show, we have CNN's John King pointing a finger at black suspects in Boston. And what is CNN, which stands for Cable News Network, what kind of news are they doing by pointing a finger at someone without substantiating it first? So we're going to talk about our state of news. I'm sure Vanessa's going to yell about that part. And Whoopi Goldberg, I want to talk about why I like Whoopi, but Whoopi made some comments about The View. It wasn't about her co-stars. People are making it out to be a shot against her co-stars. But she talks about The View and her first directorial biopic for Moms Maybelline. So that's coming out. And it's already been picked up by HBO. So I wanted to make sure I threw those things in there. I just want to remind you, you listen to Black on Black Crime in Esprit Radio. You can call in and join us at 909-265-9189. That's 909-265-9189. We're going to take a break and come back. But since Finesse has jumped on here, Finesse, do you want to jump in before we go to break? We're going to bring him in anyway. Let's see if he's ready.
Hey, you
Finesse, how you doing,
Louis?
Bro?
Hey, how you doing, SP? How are you?
I'm good.
What's up, Daniel?
What's up, man?
I missed you last week. I got in all kind of trouble last week. Oh, man, I can imagine. But you know, I don't. They didn't tell you last week. I'm the newly nominated. You know, and I want that kind of respect when I get introduced. So
I forgot. The newly nominated from your Black World blog, Finesse, is on the show now. I don't know how to introduce that, but he's about to lose his nomination because we're going to talk about.
Oh yeah, I'm a loser today.
So,
well,
I don't know how long
Well, thank you.
I should have brought some, like, sound effects with fireworks because he's not going to keep it after the show. He got nominated last week, and I'm going to bash them this week. So I won't get nominated.
Oh, I am, because you already know who I'm going to talk about.
When we talk about the sports biopics. So the sports biopics, we have Moms Maybelline. We were talking about that. We're also talking about a new movie that's coming out. I have a preview of it. It's called Peoples. Well, it was for a couple of reasons I picked the movie, but one was because Tina Gordon Chisholm, she's written screenplays, Drumline, ATL, Hustle and Flow, Something New, Hurricane Season. Like, they worked on a lot of stuff, and she used to work at the Cosby Show, and so she actually gets her first directorial debut. It is produced by Tyler Perry. It's coming out of Tyler Perry Studios, but they had
I just want to make sure you
input.
Said it. I just want to make sure you guys out there.
I was hating on Tyler Perry?
Hating on Tyler Perry. Yes.
Oh, no. And it's not because he's pretty.
Where's the commissioner at? Because I know you're going to get some flags today. I'm going to make sure.
There's no Tyler Perry hate on that. Nope. Mm-hmm. That's not right.
When I saw the topics, I was like, is he unbelievable?
Unbelievable that I brought it up?
Yep.
Okay, fine. All right, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. We're going to take a quick break and come back. You can dial in and join us, 909-265-9189. We're here with Daniel and Finesse. Commissioner is on the line. She's monitoring, but if she hits one and comes in, we'll see if we need a flag or something. Finesse is going to need one. I guarantee it.
Right, I guarantee
we'll
you get one today. I guarantee that.
I guarantee we all get one. All right, we'll be back after this break.
Grace, will you marry me?
Yes.
1, 2, 3, go!
Wade's about to learn Tama Metropolitan rules of engagement.
Everybody, this is my boyfriend.
Guilty.
Charm her mother.
Thank you for welcoming me.
You shouldn't have.
She's an AA.
I got it.
Impress her father.
Sweat lodge?
Time for men to test their manhood.
You're gonna be great.
I'm a cold pitcher of Greg Kool-Aid.
And respect the family boundaries.
Oh, my baby Greg.
On May 10th.
I don't like him.
It's pretty obvious your father does not want me here.
We can do this. We're a team.
Go, go, go!
He really brought the family together. Thank you, Wade.
Don't you dare. Don't run. You're going to set off his instinct to mate.
Well, now you're having puppies.
People. Rated PG-13. In theaters, May 10th.
The pilot's a friend of mine. You can trust him.
You're never good at that.
What?
Judging character.
The Avalon's here.
It's never about me.
You set me up?
I had no choice.
The radically new 2013 Toyota Avalon. Experience the thrilling conclusion at onlythename.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome, on with Daniel and Finesse right now. Expecting Kai a little bit later. We're going to see how the commissioner's feeling, see if she's going to jump in. But before we get started, I want to let you know you can join in 909-265-9189. That's 909-265-9189. And you can hit us up in chat. I want to say what's up to Mr. Les in the chat room. What's going on, brother? Just want to make sure we have it straight. On this program, we are talking about the Jackie Robinson movie 42 versus The Express, the Ernie Davis story. But before we get to that, we're talking about cable news network versus their cable news network bias or black suspects. CNN's John King pointed the finger at black suspects in Boston. Correspondent reported that authorities had identified a suspect in the Boston Marathon bombing as a dark-skinned male. He said that he was given more information, but he didn't want to share the details. Now, that sounds classic Finesse when somebody just comes out and goes, I know some stuff, but y'all don't know, but he black. It's pretty much what John King said.
I'm very disappointed in John King because he's one of the guys I do like on CNN, but when I heard that, I was like, you got to be kidding me. It's the same thing when I used to sit in the Fox newsroom. We were coming up with stories, and they would sit there and try to put black faces on everything they came across. If it was a murder, blackface. If it was a theft, blackface. If it was food, stamps, welfare, blackface. And I used to argue with them all the time. You know, stop leading off the newscast with the first 15 minutes full of nothing but black folks. You know, I'm not having it. You know, so here again, and here again with this whole situation, I was saying, please don't be black and please don't be Muslim, because I knew
that was going.
It was, and even when you listen to people's comments now, I heard one lady say, "Well, you know how they are, those terrorists." And I'm like, "You're making you,
that word terrorist is linked to Muslims. Carjackings right. is linked to black folks. And it's stereotypical words that need to be taken out.
Daniel, well, Timothy McVeigh was one of them. So, you know, it happens, and, you know, you can also consider a gunman a terrorist.
Oh,
most
right.
of the gunmen who create some of these crimes are them. So,
and you know what? You know what, Daniel? They tried to clean it up this weekend because people were so sure that it was Al Qaeda. Even they're still trying to tie it to that. But when it was brought up, somebody black brought up, well, what about Timothy McVeigh? Then the wording switched to domestic terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, when did this become a domestic terrorism? Yeah, like, and. But it's so funny because there were a couple of Arabs, Indians that were picked up in custody in Boston, and they were nowhere near the area. Nowhere near the area.
And that's why I always have to say, watch trying to push really extreme laws, because you know who's getting targeted when they put a law on the books, right?
Yep.
They would never have recognized that kid, and you know why? Because they kept saying, we couldn't believe that it was somebody like him, so even when I saw the picture, I didn't turn him in because I didn't think he was a good kid. He wouldn't have did that.
They were identifying him on Twitter before anybody really took it seriously.
Right. Okay. And so earlier today, I had a couple of meetings, and I was out, and I was listening to Clear Channels, which I normally don't do. I won't call out their call letters. But it was the whole right-wing media stuff, sponsored by Freedom Works. And I'm thinking, you're on major media putting out garbage, just like you said. They were calling out every group that they could, saying all of this crazy stuff. We won't even say this on this show because we don't talk like that, but they incite more riots than anybody else, which is crazy to me. So,
catering
I want
to
say
that,
this.
Catering to that base, man. Catering to that base.
Okay.
I understand the money. I'm just saying, even in the responsibility, if one of us was on that network, not only would the plug be pulled, because sponsors would not have that coming out of us, mind you, and we'd be investigated probably by our local police department. That's how they go when it comes to skin color. So this is why I'm saying this about CNN, is that what is up with their racial bias? I'm not going to call anybody out, but a producer that works with us was a producer at CNN and said the same thing. Every time they pulled out news stories off of the feeds and said, do the story, the program director or whomever the news editor guy was like, we're not doing that story. They only did sensational stories when it pointed the finger at black people.
Yep.
And the boogeyman doesn't look like them. They want to ensure that everybody realizes the boogeyman is not like us. It's those guys. It's those people.
Look at the false reports. Everybody from every network, was it just CNN, they was told it was a terrorist group, it was Al-Qaeda. They went down the list, and I'm listening, and I'm like, that's not – and I think Esprit and I had this conversation. I said, I don't believe it's a terrorist attack.
Oh, right.
I kept saying, I don't believe it's a terrorist attack. Yeah.
And I'm because if it had been a terrorist attack, it would have been much larger than that.
And let me tell you something. A couple of Muslim friends, they were saying, we were watching TV and we kept saying, I hope it wasn't a Muslim. So now you have groups that saying because they sensationalize and they get labeled and they get followed, that when they watch TV, and blacks do it all the time. There's not one black, I don't care where you at, $1 million or poor, you know, whatever your status is, you sit and watch the news, you saying, please don't be black, please don't be black. We do it.
Well, okay, just out of very fundamental deductive reasoning, I can tell you, I didn't think it was terrorist just because it happened on a significant day, like a anniversary of something. And so when that happens, it usually is. It was domestic. I don't care what anybody says about a 10-year-old leaving the Russian area, growing up in you know, American schools, turned around and just disliked America. Whatever that was homegrown, and that is more of the problem. You can say his parents are from wherever you want to, but he grew up eating ramen noodles with everybody else and all of that, and playing video games. Now, I'm just saying, like, you could try to make that distant from you all you want to, but he watched American Idol and all of this other garbage that – I shouldn't say that about American Idol. I don't watch it, so I don't know if it's garbage. But you know what I mean. They watch the same garbage on TV. For somebody who watched it, you guys could tell me. But just from saying that, they're really quick to instill fear. So I want to say this from a spiritual perspective. Don't let nobody scare you. Life is not that serious. You're going to have crackpots, and we always have had crazy people. But that is a part of what media does. That is a part of what drive industry, gun sales off the rack. You have people have this big military industry and the subcontract. There's a lot of money in scaring you. So, you know, wait a minute. And speaking of that, one thing that always irritates me, I don't mean to rant on this program today, but New York State has this non-smoking thing where they saw somebody with cancer or a leg amputated or something for not smoking. They show it during the day, and they show it around kids' programming time. They're scaring you from not smoking, which I think is just totally wrong for people like me who don't smoke anyway. But we have a fear-based society, right? We see these commercials all day. Don't do this. Childhood, whatever it's called, where the kid's coughing all day, so when your kid gets a little cough, they're like, oh, Lord, take him to the doctor. We got to get him on something. This is just fear-mongering. Yeah, it was pertussis.
Yeah, pertussis.
Childhood pertussis. The reason I brought this story up first is for this reason. The National Association of Black Journalists released an official statement in response to King's description. It said, there have been various reports identifying a potential suspect as a dark-skinned individual. This terminology is not only offensive, but it also offers an incomplete picture of relevant facts about the potential person of interest identified. When conveying information for the public good, and which can help law enforcement with the help of the vigilant public to keep the country safe, it is important that such facts be put into proper context. So as black journalists, we all kind of cringe every time we see people do that. You can tell when there's no black people in your newsroom because that vague description just scares up white folks essentially and just says, oh my gosh, there's some crazy black person on the loose. Even TBS anchor Gwen Ifill responded via Twitter. She said, disturbing that it is okay for TV to ID a Boston bomb suspect as only a dark-skinned individual. Like, we're all, can you see the parallel to this in the universe? Black folks don't even buy into that nonsense. We never have, but.
We don't, but here's the problem. Here's the problem. And this is what perception. And perceptions lead people to believe things. When you talk to anybody that knew those two young men, their perception was they were good kids, they were this, this, and this. We would never thought blase, blase, right? So that's just perception. Yeah, a report comes on and it says a dark-skinned person, and everyone believed it. You see, and that's perception
right.
Because they believe that black people or Latinos or, you know, throw Arabs and Indians into that mix because now they're always scrutinized and even confused. And they always think anything that's said with relevance that pertains to us because that's what they believe, then they run with it. You know, how many times do some of us, especially us in the media, we hear a report where a black woman says a black man killed her kids and assaulted her. We know
right.
off the cuff it's not true, but people run with it. How about those young men with the woman that said they shot at her baby and locked those two young black teens up, knowing full
right.
well that they ain't have nothing to do
oh,
with it.
Yeah.
So it's a perception thing, and I for the National Association of Black Journalists, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, I think that you need to address and be quiet and talk to your black newspapers, radio, and TV, because a lot of them weren't even covering the bombing live. So in order to contradict what's being said, we need live broadcast. So you need to talk to Centric, Aspire, BET, O, Bounce TV and say, hey, look, we need to get, when there's breaking news, you better have some journalists. You need to cover this. That's what needs
well,
to happen.
We need, Well, we need to cover it from a different perspective as well.
Right? Exactly.
So,
but we're not.
So when even when I started the news service, I created it right after 9/11. It was probably a month after. And the reason why I did that is because I knew at that time fear-mongering was the big thing in the world. And just like I'm not going to quote who said this, but sometimes it is black folks who have lived under oppression a little bit can see it a little bit clearer when other folks get scared. And so I understood exactly what the person was saying when they said that, because the problem is that you just cannot panic. You cannot make decisions out of fear, and there was nowhere to turn. Like, everybody right now looks at the president and says, what kind of failure did the FBI have? And we literally went to war after 9/11 just because the Bush folks was making stuff up. Because everybody was like, we have to hit somebody, right? And everybody
right.
bought it. So now we're years later talking about, hey, all those people died at war and they had nothing to do with it. How come we didn't know? Because you couldn't hear during that time. And by the way, earlier in the week, there was two stories. A black man was jailed for 40 years for the murder of an 8-year-old girl. He just got out because they finally tested his blood type and it didn't match the blood type on the scene in 1975. Just got out of jail 40 years ago. He was in jail for almost 40 years. And on U.S. Air, two young black men were moved out of first class, and they made them change their clothes because they had a hooded sweatshirt on, whereas there were two other passengers that they took pictures of that had jeans and hooded sweatshirts on in first class, and they didn't do anything to them. So U.S. Airways is getting sued. See where this is going? See, once the news keeps perpetuating the same thing, it makes everybody else paranoid. So, Finesse, you were right about that. Paranoia just spins.
Mm-hmm. And that's the new selling point. That's the new selling. And see, what it does is it gives the NRA the right to say, see, this is why we need guns. If everybody had guns, they wouldn't set off the bomb. That's the kind of ignorance they say.
Right, right. Right, because that is just, like, crazy when you think about it. It's like we always try to sell that back to each other, that if we become extremists, then, you know, people make money during war. So you watch who's telling you to go to war. They're probably selling you the ammunition. That's all I'm saying. So
and if you check, Franklin Delano Roosevelt said that war is about money.
Oh yeah, there's been a lot of people throughout history who've warned against the elite selling you war, right? Because it keeps everybody on the same page. So as we start talking about, I hear this a lot, and someone recently asked me a parent of some teenagers was asking about all of this secret society stuff. And my response to that is secret society folks don't really have as much power as they did back in the days, but unless you create enough fear and hostility so that everybody gets the same brainwashing, right? The more spiritual people are, the less that it has a big hold. So what happens with people with money? They try to scare you all day. Presidential campaigns are like that. You look at the Republicans, it is all fear-based, because if they get everybody on the same page scared of the same thing, they'll say, I'm your leader. So it's fear-based politics like it is fear-based anything else. I can't even remember what happened to, what was that, bird flu or something? Like, people don't, the influenza is just the flu. So it's like, oh, it could be a little bit harsher than before. So people die every year of the flu. No more died in that year than died in any other year. We just focused on people who died from the flu, and it made paranoia happen. So anyway, okay, that's me.
And I just want to add this. And whenever there's any kind of truth that's put out there that's true, the paranoid folks will buy somebody's voice, whether it be a news article they'll place in the newspaper, or a radio ad, or a story on TV. Just like, and the greatest example, you talked about the bird flu and influenza and the flu. People don't realize you really don't need to get a flu shot. But if you say that, they will go get a doctor and like, that's crazy, you'll die, and blase, blase, blase.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they sell it because that's the only way they can make money.
Matter of fact, I'll bring on a couple of physicians. And I was kind of thinking about this. You know, when you start talking about quantum reality and spirituality, there is a lot of things, placebos and aspirin, that helps just as well as anything else, because once it eases your mind, it eases your body. So So that's the trick, is to keep tension out of your body.
It's sort of like when people go to the store and they say, I have to have this brand name product. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting a generic brand, which is made by the same company, they make both brands. But you can't tell people that. Well, this Heinz tastes better than the Wegmans brand. It's made by the same people.
Yeah, when you unveil the cover off that, every cereal is made by like three companies, like just across the board. So it's either Post, Kellogg's, or General Mills, and all of the subsidiaries and all the smaller, you know, secondary stuff is usually made out of the same plant. So it's kind of like they put a little less sugar to tell you that it's a generic version, or more sugar to tell you it's generic. So it's interesting when you realize how conglomerations work. Or mm-hmm. to know that somebody like Anheuser, I didn't know this, but pretty much all of the bread that's on your shelves, especially generic stuff, is pretty much coming from farms that Anheuser-Busch owns, because they brought up all of the manufacturers of wheat because they use it to make beer. So they purchased them all and at some point, and they pretty much supply the grain in this country, Anheuser-Busch.
Talking about
truth today. But anyway, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. Call in, join us, 909-265-9189. We're not going to take a break. I'm just going to go into the next topic since I'm talking about cursing out today. I want to call this, I keep thinking, this is why I like Whoopi Goldberg. Now, Whoopi Goldberg was asked about hiring new co-stars on The View and what she thought. And she said, let me tell you this about The View. I take a paycheck every other week. That's all I do. I couldn't give a S what comes. I do my job. I have a contract. That's where I stand. I don't give a S, is what she said. My job is to show up, be cute at 11, and get the F off by 12. That's what I try to do. I love Whoopi Goldberg. Now, who has the nerve to say, stop bugging me, asking me about Barbara and Elizabeth House? But I don't care. They don't care about me. I get fired tomorrow. They caught Whoopi on the wrong day, didn't they?
They sure did. Back in the day when she, I guess she took a lot of heat for The Color Purple, and I don't think she stood up for herself at that time, and now she's older, and she's like, you know what, I'm just going to say what the heck, and whatever comes from that, comes from that. But she just speaks her mind, man. Forget all that.
Playing nice,
you know what I'm saying?
As watching
Whoopi grow as a person, Whoopi is a perfect example. Black folks rejected her because she wasn't fine. I remember her being in Arsenio Hall, and she said, you know, y'all brothers wasn't even checking for me after that whole Ted Danson thing. And she says, now you have something to say. But nobody was checking for me. No one was trying to date me. She said the only one that ever tried to date her was Eddie Murphy. So to watch her come full circle and realize what she can say, what she can't say, then realize that she does have a little bit of power, and then really bringing it to people. And I think that's, you know, they had Rosie O'Donnell on The View, and that was fine, but Whoopi brings it around full circle. She holds everybody accountable, black, white. She holds Barbara Walters accountable, you know, Elizabeth accountable. She doesn't let anybody get away with anything. And when she messes up and she apologizes. But in hearing that comment by Whoopi Goldberg, I'll tell you this. When Barbara is gone next year, and I think Elizabeth will be gone, Joy's already leaving, next year or end of this year, I think that show will be canceled. I think the show will be canceled because you won't have...
You can't have somebody off the grid like that. They're not going to be able to rein her in from a distance.
Well, not only that, we live in such a more politically correct society now where people are going to be afraid to say some of the things that really are on their mind or disagree with. And they're going to be so scared who are you going to get? Who are you going to get?
No, I'm saying, like, I only watch The View because Whoopi's on there, right? Yeah, because when you watch
I watch
people,
it because of all
like,
of them.
See, and I watch it. Here's what I know. The ABC is just as conservative as Fox and just as crazy as CNN. And the reason I say that is this. If you start having Bill O'Reilly just because he has a book come out and have Donald Trump every other day because that's Barbara's boy, you need to start looking at who Bill Getty is, the executive producer. And then you start need to ask yourself, why do you have Sarah Palin's daughter on Dancing with the Stars? When you try to integrate crazy into society, I have some questions for you. So when Whoopi sits there every now and then, and she'll keep her mouth closed and she'll look at them because she knows what they're doing.
Right.
I usually take a cue from Whoopi. Whoopi don't care.
Yep. But here's the thing. Because all of them, other than Whoopi, have been staples on there from the beginning, they get a pass. So because they each have something, Whoopi is more the one to watch because she just, like, she won't even speak to Donald Trump when he come on. If you notice sometimes, she just...
He crazy?
Just don't even acknowledge him. But what happens now is because Barbara Walters has so much control because they actually try to make Barbara bring in people, you know, tell Whoopi to calm down, tell, you know, all this other stuff, and she says no, because that's not the platform for this show. Now she's leaving. And people don't like Elizabeth, which is unfair, because she's only speaking, you know, you're giving the balanced view, so she's giving her view. That's why they call it the view.
She's crazy, too.
I'm not trying to pacify her, but at the same time, she's entitled to that, because there's some people that, and they have been able to, and they shouldn't have to, but they've all been able to see each other's side and grow, which is great to see on TV. But now, if you don't have Barbara Walters there to say to Whoopi, you can't do this, you're going to try to put somebody else in that chair and control Whoopi? And who else is going to come on that show that's really going to speak their mind because they're thinking about some of the paychecks down the line? I don't see it.
But I think somebody else is going to take their – see, I think without Whoopi there – you don't have as much of a draw because Whoopi's a star, right?
So and you have a movie star on.
Okay, but I'm just saying I don't think so. I think they'll just try to rein it in a little differently, and they're going to probably try to get somebody like Brooke Shields because they actually like Brooke Shields. People like that on there, and I like Brooke Shields too. But the thing is that they're going to do what they do. Like I don't really watch it like that.
But is Brooke Shields going to be able to really be herself and say some things, or is she worried about backlash? Elizabeth's not worried about that. And then with Joy replacing
Joy,
I think they said
yes, she is. She wouldn't be wearing, like, really high skirts on the program if she wasn't worried about being a sex symbol and people liking her.
Well,
that's why she cries on there at a drop of a dime every time Sherry says something who's a non-controversial person on the planet. And I'm not going to talk about her because that would be a black-on-black crime.
We're about to commit a black-on-black crime on Sherry.
That's why I didn't really want to mention Sherry. But I want to say this. When Sherry says something negative about Elizabeth passes out. Because not only when the president comes on, she does not have respect enough for the office, but she wears a little short skirt up under the president, and she giggling up under him like they all giggled under Snoop, and then act like we got to be really tight feminists, and then Snoop come on there, and they're like, oh, it's Snoop, you know.
Yeah, but
don't forget when LL came on.
I forgot about
that. An arm curl.
Exactly. She said, here's what she did. It was very stereotypical, too. She goes, can you lift me? I was like, oh, my gosh, what are we in fourth grade?
Wait a minute, that's just for women. Because when he was on, what's that other one? It's The View, The Chew, and The Talk. Oh, that's the other show. The Five Senses show, The Talk. When LL was on there, somebody asked him to bench press them as well. So that's just women being women. But my point is this. They're not going to have any other women that come on that show that's going to voice a lot of stuff that these women say. They're talking about getting Kathy Griffin. Kathy Griffin would be kicked off the show before her contract starts.
They keep the gay dude on there.
I heard what you said, Roman. I'm about to commit another crime, and you know the society today, we can't do that because we'll be, you know, we already being censored anyway.
All right, well, should we move along for this? You know what? There is no estrogen on the program, so although the commiss, she's busy, she'll hit one and come on when she's ready, or she'll unmute her mic.
I ain't mad at Sherry Shepherd, but I'm trying to figure out how she collected the check. A box of rocks. That's all I gotta say.
That's a flag finesse.
A box of rocks.
All right. Well, The moral of my Whoopi Goldberg story is Whoopi is set to for her directorial. I know. It's hard to say.
We got one and a half black people on the view.
You're listening to Black on Black Crime. Send your comments to BOBC at soulofsyracuse.com. And I can tell you right now, we don't really care, but let it be. All right. Now, Whoopi Goldberg is set for her directorial debut of Moms, Mabley, I Got Something to Tell You, which has made its world premiere already at the 2013 Tribeca Film Festival. It highlights the career of the comedic pioneer and entertainer Moms Mabley, who began her career as a vaudeville star who traveled the Chitlin Circuit back then. I think we still have one, don't we, Finesse? Never mind. Don't commit the crime.
There's always a Chitlin Circuit. There's always a Chitlin Circuit.
Sure is. Tyler Perry came up through. Never mind. All right. And with other icon entertainers for the first half of the 20th century, I Got Something to Tell You is told through several celebrated comedians and entertainers, including Arsenio Hall, Eddie Murphy, Joan Rivers, Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte, Jerry Stiller.
Was he going to go see that?
Quincy Jones, and amongst others. I was going to say, Kathy Griffin is on there, too. I didn't ignore Finesse. I just needed to get through Kathy Griffin because I stopped because I was laughing at her. All right. They celebrate the late comedic icon and the first female comedian pioneer during the Civil Rights Movement. Now, HBO acquired all its broadcast rights and home video rights. Whoopi had this movie up on one of those fundraising sites to raise money to produce this movie. And I'm glad to see it's actually going to be released. Now, if you don't know who Moms Mabley is, her name is Jackie Moms Mabley. She's born March 19, 1894 in North Carolina, died in 1975 in White Plains. She was born Loretta Mary Atkin. Mabley was one of the most successful entertainers of black vaudeville stage. She earned $10,000 a week at the Apollo in Harlem at the height of her career in the 60s. In the 60s, she made $10,000 a week.
That's a lot of grip.
Hell yeah. She became known to the wider audience and played Carnegie Hall in 62. She made a number of mainstream TV appearances during the 60s, and she was billed as the funniest woman in the world. She took her stage name, Jackie Mabley, from an early boyfriend. Now, she commented in Ebony in the 1970s that he took so much more from her, it was the least that she could do was take his name. I think that is just wrong and funny at the same time. So that I'm glad Whoopi was on a mission to get this movie done, and I'm glad that she got it.
I want to see how many blacks, including Yvette, try to boycott or say something stupid out of their mouths regarding this.
They're going to say something stupid and I don't have nothing for them. Oh, no, they'll be on Black on Black Crime. We're going to blast them like they don't have no sense.
Oh, you guys going to get hurt
good
today.
On that note, because we know what that means, because we gotta have to take a quick one and come back and talk about our main topic today.
Yeah, you better start with the Express first. You better start with the Express first. Yeah, let's get the 42.
Mm-hmm. This is why this music is just about to start to play, because I'm going to have to take a break. We know where
that's why I was nominated
for what I
say. So here we go.
Daniel, would you like to say something before Finesse blows up?
No, man, I got to get away from the explosion.
Oh, you know, I think I'm going to play Jay-Z's Open Letter, because I still say, Finesse, like you know, that has to be, that's going to be classic. For when you have something to say to somebody, put it on wax. Just let it go.
Put it on wax.
All right, put it on wax. We'll be right back. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Black on Black Crime. We'll be back after this message. Put it on wax.
Listen to text message.
You still coming?
Call Sharon.
Hey, where are you?
Is that Charlie? Tell her to see you wait.
You need directions?
No, I'm good.
That's your plans.
Oh, I do.
Luxury well chosen. The 2012 Lincoln MKX.
All right, welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. We're here with Brother Daniel. Had to introduce you first. Right, and we have Finesse on the board today. What's up, Finesse?
Oh, got open letter. Yvette, this is coming to you, baby. Bring that beat back.
Oh, yeah. All right, you can join in. This is Black on Black Crime. 909-265-9189. You can check us out in the chat room if you have any questions or something you want to add to the show. If you want to send us an email during the week, send it to bobc@soulofsyracuse.com. And, you know, we'll try to get your comments on. All right, now, our main topic today is Jackie Robinson and, because it's not versus, this is not a black on black crime, Jackie Robinson's 42 and Ernie Davis, The Express. Now, due to Finesse's request, because we may have to close the whole show out on 42, but due to Finesse's request, we're going to start with the Express. Now, it's based on a real-life story of Ernie Davis, who was the first black Heisman Trophy winner who played for Syracuse University. It was 2008 that the story was filmed, and the storyline was conceived from a book, Ernie Davis, The Elmira Express. It was based on the Syracuse University football player, first African-American to win the Heisman, and he was portrayed by actor Rob Brown. Now, The Express explores civil topics like racism, discrimination, and athletics. Daniel, I know you saw the movie. Now, I still have not seen that movie. What do you think about The Express?
I had a good feeling about it. It touched on several topics. You would automatically expect that as an African-American at a all-white school, being one of the first black athletes, that racism is going to be something that he faced. But what I was intrigued about was from his perspective, his older brother was an activist of sorts and wanted him to speak up more so on the behalf of African-Americans. And it's a very precarious situation, being that I'm the first black athlete, and I'm at this white school, I don't need to make waves. But at the same time, his brother brought to the point to him is that there are people here in our neighborhood that look up to you as well. What are you going to do for those folks? So it actually gave him some chutzpah, that's not a black term, to kind of stand up for himself in the midst of things when his white coach would maybe want to try to hold him out from scoring because of what might happen in this white stadium if a black man scored. He was like, you know, coach, whose side are you on? He said, these people here work differently, Ernie, and we can't, you know, we want to make sure the team gets out of here. He said, you know, those folks, the white folks are watching, but also the black folks that are sitting high up in the stands, they're watching as well. So it was very riveting to see him step up and step out as a 20-something-year-old to challenge not only the system at large, but also his coach. I really liked it. It also showed, I don't know if you've ever heard of Floyd Little, but Floyd Little decided to go to Syracuse instead of going to, I think he was going to Notre Dame, I'm not sure, but he changed his mind and decided to go to Syracuse because of Ernie Davis.
Okay, I guess I owe a full disclaimer. Finesse and I are alumni of Syracuse University, so we definitely have a lot of information on this. I actually met Floyd Little, know his wife really well. The thing about Ernie Davis coming to Syracuse is he was actually recruited by Jim Brown. So he went in the league before Jim Brown, and then Ernie Davis came in behind Jim Brown. So if you knew the stories that we knew about Jim Brown during that time, because they couldn't stay on campus. You know, John Mackey, the great tight end for the Colts, played for Syracuse University. I'm sure Finesse knows Dr. Rick Wright tells some interesting stories about John Mackey and those guys when they were here. So this place is still very conservative. Go ahead, Finesse.
The film, like you were saying, there are certain parts of it that were good. But it was too – you can't – and I'm not comparing 42 to this, but they had some similar things. the thing with the Ernie Davis story is it was too sugar-coated. And I think if you're going to tell it, then be truthful in how it's told. Because, as you said, talking to Dr. Rick Wright, he will tell you the stories of what really went down and happened. And I think that when you don't do that, it loses traction because it's history. So let's not sugarcoat history. They was calling these players niggas. They were telling them you can't because you niggas. So you have to really tell the story. And I think when you're telling a broad story like that, and I think it was an hour and a half or an hour 40, it wasn't enough time.
It was actually about 2.5 hours long.
Was it?
I didn't even think it was long.
Yeah, it was pretty long. Yeah.
I was around during the premiere, but I never actually saw the movie, which is interesting.
I saw it, and I gave it about a C+, B-, only because it's sugar-coated. They watered it down to be acceptable.
They had to. Right. They had to. During that time, no time to play as black folks. Just so that you know.
Yeah, especially, you know, people think in the South it was the only place where there was racism. We could tell you some stories about Syracuse up until the point when I left.
Syracuse University is a private school. They don't really have a lot of interaction with off-campus stuff, and they don't want athletes to. They don't want black people who go there to have any interaction off-campus.
And they sit right near the hood. Oh, they were really in amongst the hood up until they started buying property because you had the South Side. They were 2 minutes away from the South Side. They were over there by the Cherry Hill area. So they were connected. And us growing up there, we had an influence not only with Syracuse, but we had influence with Syracuse University. And those are stories that at another time will come out because there are a lot of blacks that contributed to the history of not only Syracuse, but Syracuse University. And they need to be told correctly. There needs to be a Dave Bing story. There needs to be a real Jim Brown story. And I really would like for them to rework that Ernie Davis story because there were things to sugarcoat to make Syracuse and Syracuse University better than what it was. And I'm not saying it's a great place. I love Syracuse. I love the university. But if you're going to tell story, tell the story correctly.
But it's interesting. When you start talking biopics, you really go through this whole thing about do you really want to know what happened or do you want to make it a story for kids? Because I always say that when it comes to information generally. When you tell kids don't worry about racism and all of that other stuff, you can't tell adults that because they have to watch out for their kids. So we can't ignore racism generally. Go ahead, Finesse.
Well, now when you bring in 42, the thing with the director and the producer, which we get into later, they have a problem with this producer just because he's white. This guy spent his own money so that Hollywood could not tell him how to do it. He got at least 95% of the story as accurate as possible. From the quote to the mannerisms to everything, he made sure that he wanted to tell the story. And this was just a year. He's doing the year look, not a whole lifespan, just the 1 year. And he got it correct. And that's the difference. Yeah. He wanted to tell the story, tell the nasty truth about racism.
And his widow is alive, so she was able to validate a lot of the stories, whereas in Ernie Davis's case, when you start taking it from the coach's perspective and taking it from – and that's what I was worried about 42, is that if you want to do it from Branch Rickey's perspective, of course it don't look as bad unless you was living under those circumstances. But here's an internet comment about Ernie Davis. One of them, I chose this one, but didn't really want to go into them too much because I know we had a lot for 42. But one of the comments for Ernie Davis said, older white female, I'm not going to say her name, but she said, we had just moved to the Dallas area when Syracuse came to the Cotton Bowl to play Texas. It was January 1st, 1960. Syracuse won 23-14. I knew nothing about football. My husband's boss took us to the game since we moved from Syracuse. And it was the most embarrassing thing I ever seen in my life. She said she sent messages to Ernie Davis Hotel just saying how, you know, she said I was just ashamed for what was going on in the Cotton Bowl in the hotels that they stayed in. You know, they had segregated stuff and they wanted the black players in a different hotel than the white players. She just said that it was just horrible. That was just the white person's perspective. But I just wanted to make sure I put that internet comment in there. And that was posted on Elmira Free Press is where Ernie Davis is from. But it was posted on there. So a lot of his old high school coach and all of them, there's a bunch of quotes from different people. And this was one of the quotes that was on there. Now, The Express premiered in theaters nationwide in October 10, 2008, grossed $9,793,000 in domestic tickets. The film was technically considered a financial failure due to its budget of $40 million. Now, Dennis Quaid, Charles S. Dutton, Rob Brown starred as Davis. So when you start talking about how are they going to make money at the box office, they watered it down and it still didn't make money. So.
And it was poorly, let me tell you something, it was poorly promoted. If I remember correctly, not too many black media outlets, talking newspapers and radio, even got one red cent of advertising for that film.
And probably
so
didn't get any promo stuff. Yeah, yeah.
We couldn't promote it.
If you're having that problem, that's a whole other story. Now,
yeah. Well, I remember seeing some ads for it, but it wasn't riveting enough for me to say, hey, go see this.
And that was done purposely. That was done. They watered down everything because when you talk about making a time, you're taking a piece from that time period, it's a decision of, well, how much racism do we want to show? You know,
right, because
people
it was fresh.
Right.
It was pure and fresh at that point.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So they say, well, you know, we don't want to do this. So they pull back on the advertising. Even the 42, I don't like the poster for that because it just shows Jackie sliding into the base. It's the safest way, but you're not promoting enough. Now, had they come up with signs that show people protesting or this and that, would that have been better? I think so, but they have to look. They're looking at it from their standpoint: is we want to make money, and if we don't make money and get people to see this, then it'll be a flop. Sort of like Red Tails.
Right, but let's go into 42. Now, the life story of Jackie Robinson and his history-making signing with Brooklyn Dodgers under. And this is how they wrote it, the guidance of team executive Branch Rickey. 42 takes the name of Robinson's number, which the Major League Baseball retired from use in 1997 on the 50th anniversary of Jackie Robinson becoming the first black player in the league. Now, Robinson entered Major League Baseball in 1947. His wife, Rachel Robinson, who's now 90, founded the Jackie Robinson Foundation to help educate underprivileged youth in 1973.
She still looked good at 90.
Yes. Yep. The Robinsons were married in 1946 until he passed away of a heart attack at 53 in 1972. And when he left baseball, he went directly into advocating for black folks, like met with Martin Luther King. He used his celebrity, whatever that was, to go out and make noise. One of the interesting things about him, really quick, is that I'm trying to think of who said this, but it's been said that being that he had to suppress all of the anger and emotion led to the stress of his heart attack at age 53, because everybody praises him for not fighting back and white folks spitting on him and all that other stuff, but he didn't fight back, and they tried to sell that to us, and I cannot remember the person's name, it'll come to me, said that, and who actually knew him, said, and somebody really famous, said that they think that, honestly, that it led to his heart attack. He kept suppressing
it.
You cannot do that to your system. No, it was somebody black. Because he was going with, Muhammad Ali and Bill Russell and all those guys when they formed that sports thing of athletes speaking out against racism. They started to do activism in the late 60s. When he got out of baseball, he went straight into that and tried to make a change and make a difference, and because he had to hold back from it so long. And so people praise him for taking all of that bull, and, you know, you shouldn't have to do that, but that seems what, you know, people were praising for him. Now, Robinson wrote in his memoirs after two decades from his achievements in baseball that he couldn't bring himself to salute the American flag or stand for the national anthem because that it reminded him a black man in a white world.
And what's funny is they did that in the movie. If you pay attention, if you saw the movie, when they were doing the national anthem, he was just standing there. He was not mouthing the national anthem.
Yeah, he said 2 decades after he was out of baseball, he said, I still can't do it. I don't know if that was in the movie, but
and see, even though the movie didn't touch on this because it's just doing that 1 year. Jackie Robinson he had to deal with white folks, and then he had to deal with his own people because the Negro League baseball team, there were a lot of players, they were upset with him because he wanted to integrate baseball, and they didn't. They thought he abandoned them and was saying stuff about them. A lot of players were jealous because why him? Why not Satchel Paige? And it brings it out in the movie just for a second. Why didn't they pick Satchel Paige? He had to deal with a lot. And you got to remember, this is before civil rights.
Oh, no
so
doubt.
There was no example for him to see. There was no, he had no one he could talk to. There was nobody who had his back. He had his wife and his kids. And he had Branch Rickey, on the other hand, trying to help mold him and show him the different things. And that was it. That was it.
Right.
So for people to say the kind of things that they say about Mr. Robinson, it's really disheartening. And when you have black folks saying they're not going to go see a movie because he didn't do enough, what more do you want him to do?
Let's go into that. Let's just go right into it because I did see a lot of criticism saying, you know, Jackie Robinson didn't play first base, he played second base. No, in his first year, he played first base so that the white players wouldn't spike him and slide into the
right.
second. So his very first year, he played first base.
Know your history, folks.
People,
you sure did.
Yeah, and so just to know that they were focusing on 1 year, they weren't going through all of this other stuff where people want to say that it's not accurate and all of the other stuff. I think if it's good enough for his wife, as much heat as he took in his life, that I need to be okay with it. Go ahead for that.
Here's the thing. She signed off on this movie. Now, just so people know, Spike Lee and Denzel Washington did go to her many years earlier about doing a movie. And
yes.
From what I understand, she didn't like the way the whole Malcolm X was done. You know, she thought it was a great movie. She didn't want that. She wanted as much truth to be told as possible. And she really just wanted to concentrate when he broke into the league. So that's what this director did. He brought it to her, and they agreed on it. So for me, what I have the problem is black folks, you're killing me. You want our story told, but you want it told a certain way. You don't want the ugly side of it. You just want the good side of it. And it doesn't work like that. And then when you get great movies like Santa Ana by Spike Lee, where are your black folks to see that? Where are you black folks to go and see Red Tails? So then a white director, which I have no problem with as long as he's going to tell the story correctly and not sugarcoat it, he comes along and gets it right. You're going to go on a blog and tell people don't go see the movie because Jackie Robinson was this, this, and that, and you don't even have your facts straight? I have a problem with that. I have a problem because people think the director is going to get all the money. He has a black actor, a no-name actor. This is his one shot. If he fails, as hard it is for black actors to get a job, he is done. He nailed it. You also had other black actors that were in the film. Not only were they in the film, you had others that were doing the cinematography, others that were grips, others that were caterers. So when you say don't go see a film, particularly starring a black actor, as it's starring his first starring role, what you're essentially saying to white media, white producers, white movie houses, okay, well, we're not going to make any more black films because blacks are not going to come support it. And this pisses me off because I went to the movie, went twice. I haven't seen any black males under the age, unless they with their wives, under the age of 40 in a theater.
I'm just saying that my area.
Uh-huh. So I have a problem with we're not supporting it. I have a problem with that, and I have a problem with Yvette. That's your name, yourblackworld.net. I know I was nominated, but let me tell you something. You put out misinformation, and you guys get over a million people that read that blog.
Since we're committing black on black crimes on her, since you named her, there are some other stories that she wrote that I won't bring up that I think
she needs
you know,
a black on black. She hates black people.
I don't think she likes black people. I've read some of her stuff, and I am telling you that when you start talking about being overcritical on black folks, I've read some of her stuff, and it just seems to be crazy. Now, just to get it some numbers in here. The opening gate for Jackie Robinson's Story topped in its opening weekend $27.3 million, and it's currently at about $54 million.
And we're not even talking about Jersey. We're not even talking about the Jersey sales.
Oh yeah, we're not talking
42.
About added on.
Just the movie.
Right. Right.
Well, I'm
just
going
preliminary.
To see.
It's only been
I'm going
week.
To see it when at the end of the show. Please do, because
cool.
We want to hear your comments. And for Burger King and McDonald's, why we ain't have no Jackie Robinson figurine with Daddy Meal? We got Star Wars figurines. I'm just saying.
I love me some Burger King, so I'd have been there today to get one too.
and that would have been an easy sell too, wouldn't it? Now
it sure would have.
Now the First Lady encouraged all Americans to see 42 and praised Jackie for meeting hatred with decency and Rachel, his wife, for being Jackie's equal in every way. There was a screening at the White House. Harrison Ford said, "The telling of this story for me was a great honor." Jackie Robinson's number 42 was retired from every team in Major League Baseball except for the New York Yankees, Mariano Rivera, who has number 42.
How fitting is that? Another minority has it.
Yeah, and he had it. He was grandfathered in by the league because he had it before they retired it across the board. Right. And while I'm at it, Time Magazine did a story, and its relevance to its all-time high of 27% of minorities in the Major League Baseball in 75, specifically African-American players. Last year, 8%. In 75, it was 27%, and now it's 8%. So when Jackie Robinson,
that's a whole nother issue. We'll talk about that.
And that's a whole nother story. So I just wanted to make sure I put that out there
here's another thing with the Jackie that I love, the movie 42, the love story between he and his wife. You know, we have people talk about black love and relationships and all of that. And this would get me with Yvette. This movie portrayed that and got it exactly right. And we always talk about support and love and honor each other. Just for that alone, even if women don't like baseball, the story alone is encouraging because it shows it can be done. It can be done. So this story on so many levels, it was told, shown through Branch Rickey's eyes. It was definitely shown from Jackie's side,
her,
but
yeah.
Her. It was great. It was. I couldn't. You couldn't ask for anything more.
And his wife gives the producer a lot of credit for how the movie turned out. She said, yep. and I'm not quoting her, but I remember in looking at a lot of quotes from her. She said that he went farther than he had to go. Which yep. meant that they could have watered it down and she'd have been okay, but he said no and he put it out there. So I don't know what that means because I didn't see it, but she said he went farther than he had to go.
I'm gonna tell you, hey Daniel, you going to see it afterwards, right?
Right after.
Let me tell you something. I'm gonna tell you how true this movie is. They used the word Nick like I was saying it.
Oh God! All right, we're not gonna beep him for that one.
I'm saying this to say. That's the realness of it. When we were talking about Ernie Davis' story, that's the realness.
Right.
They brought the realness, and it's going to irritate you. It's going to irritate you because how else can you move past the subject if you're not going to talk about it? You got to see how it felt. And when I was there, just to see the white women in the audience, they cringed. Like it bothered them. I saw one white woman just crying. And I'm like, this movie touched and moved somebody. That's what it's supposed to do. And when you don't do that and you don't do it correctly and show the truth, it's just watered down. It means nothing.
They talked about how great of a job Chadwick Boseman did. He played Jackie Robinson. He's also is in talks to join the cast of another sports movie playing a linebacker directed by Ivan Reitman called Draft Day. Now, it's with Kevin Costner, who will also star in it, who will play the general manager for Draft Day. He's playing the linebacker from Louisiana who hopes to be drafted by an NFL team. So Chadwick Boseman, I guess he did such a great job in 42. They just came right at him right after. So We have a couple of internet comments. One said, congratulations to him. I hope he doesn't become typecast as sports roles. I loved him from Lincoln Heights because he was on that program, Lincoln Heights, that television show, by the way. And it said, I wouldn't mind him playing John Stewart, Green Lantern, in the Justice League or a solo feature one day. So, you know, apparently he did a great, great job in that movie.
He did. I'm telling you, I thought he was Jackie Robinson.
Oh, that is
good. Everything. The mannerisms, the way, everything. How he held the bat, you know, what he did before getting in the batter's box. Everything. Everything. Great, yeah. Great job, great movie. And for and again, you know, for people who say, oh, black people say, oh, we shouldn't go see The Help, or we shouldn't go see 42, who didn't go see Red Tails, this is a part of history. But you will come out, and you will take your behind to a club for free drinks and shake your tail.
Okay, I didn't go see Help
for,
now.
You need to go see Help too.
I
that was
help.
A great movie as well. You need help. You need help, and you better go watch Help. It was a good movie.
All right, I was gonna say since Kai and Kathleen aren't on here to back me up, see, because this is where I need nurturing. Guys don't do this well.
No,
that's too much testosterone to build.
I'm not giving you no nurturing because you need to go see this. That was also part of our history, and it was a great movie. It really was a great movie.
All right. Now, before we move on, I just want to let you know, you're listening to Black on Black Crime on S3 Radio. Our call-in number is 909-265-9189. We are talking about the movie 42 and the movie The Express, the Ernie Davis movie. And just before, we have some entertainment news and information, and I want to talk about another movie. But before I do that, I'll give you some quick news stories because – I want to do this because I keep hearing people saying that black folks are still not achieving things in today's world, but International Speedway Corporation has added two new board members, Larry Woodard and Sonia Marie Green. Both are black, and they're gone to International Speedway, which is the motor speed racing society. And Dockers brand has announced Adrian Lofton Shaw has joined the company, the Vice President of Chief Marketing Officer. So when you see some black Dockers commercials, don't be surprised. She'll be responsible for creating and leading Dockers brand strategy and overseeing Dockers global marketing. Also,
that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I try not to let people get too down on anything just by saying you have to keep pushing because we have a lot of qualified people out here that is getting things done. And now there's a new network. I'm sure you're going to yell about this, Finesse. Soul of the South Network, a 24-hour regional broadcasting network targeting African-American viewers in the South in key northern and Midwest sister cities. They will launch in 30 markets on Memorial Day weekend, May 27th.
Stop it. Why y'all black folks, see, y'all get a group and y'all decide, we're going to start a TV. It's hard to have a TV network. It costs money.
There's 2 billion cable stations, and so they figure, hey, if you can put out all them stations, we can have more than one black network.
So what?
Right.
What you going to show?
Motown is attempting their first gospel music label since their short-lived Divinity Records in 1962. It's called Motown Gospel. They signed CC Winans. So,
artists gonna get their money this time?
There's no guarantee. It didn't say anything about that in the story. We don't know if anybody's gonna see their money from Motown.
Oh, that's why the first one failed.
All right, and so.
Tell the whole story now.
And so I want to say Paulette Washington, Denzel Washington's wife, the superstar Denzel Washington, as the ladies know on the show, is an actress as well, in case you didn't know. She's joining Anika Rose, David Alan Greer, and Sly Jackson and Tanya Richardson, Wood Harris, Boyce Jenkins, and Harrison Knight for the Watsons Go to Birmingham. And it's based on this Christopher Paul Curtis 1995 novel that talks about African-American family living in Flint, Michigan. Now, if you don't know, she met Denzel Washington in 77 where they were both on the set of a movie called Wilma, and they both co-starred in it. 4 years later, in 81, was her second role in the musical comedy Pearly, and she did go back to the stage in 2011 to co-star in an off-Broadway play called Desperate Writers at the Union Square Theater. So in case you didn't know, Denzel Washington's wife is an actress. I had to put that information in just in case the ladies was on here hating because they were just said, you know. Yeah,
For a minute there, I thought you were going to say that she joined the Housewives of Atlanta.
That is a black-on-black crime. that is flat a black-on-black crime. So we're not going to even – I'm not going to even pay you any attention on that.
Denzel, my man, y'all need to stop jocking.
She don't have anything to worry about. She's been with him that long. I don't think there's that big of a deal. She should adopt the Jada Pinkett Smith methodology of, hey, do what y'all do. Anyway.
No,
okay.
She needs – no, don't adopt Jada because Jada just tells too much business. Keep that to yourself. Just
I know.
Tell Will
you can
business.
Keep that quiet. No hate on the Smiths, but – all right. Now, Tina Gordon Chisholm.
Call me Jada.
Peoples is a movie which stars Craig Robinson, David Alan Greer, Kerry Washington, F. Epiphany Merkelson, Melvin Van Peebles, Diane Carroll, Tyler James Williams from Everybody Hates Chris, and Kylie Hawk. I don't know if you know who she is. She's a cutie. They have a Lionsgate release date of Mother's Day weekend, May 10th. It's produced by Tyler Perry and Stephanie Allen. So the film centers around Robinson's character, Wade Walker, who is eager to propose to his girlfriend, Grace Peebles, a young man enduring the weekend from hell is how they described it when he surprises his girlfriend by showing up with her parents. Finesse, you said you're surprised I was going to talk about this movie. Why?
I was surprised because you hate on Tyler Perry, man.
I don't hate on Tyler Perry. I don't
hate on Tyler Perry.
I don't like Madea.
You commit black on black crime against Tyler Perry. Never get a flag. And I'm just here to say, as the nominated voice for Your Black World until they get rid of it.
You
today.
Have to be the reason in the room. Daniel,
have to be the reason
I think
in the
Daniel
room,
owns
man.
The title. I think Daniel owns that title of being reasonable in
Daniel,
the room.
Daniel,
I can't give
tell
that
him.
To you, Finesse.
Daniel, tell
him. I try to be middle of the road. Well, I mean, I don't understand why you don't like the Madea character. I mean, she's funny.
See, that's why Daniel's the neutral guy. I didn't say I didn't like all of Tyler Perry's stuff. Like, I haven't
no,
watched it.
No, you said you didn't like Madea. Just
now,
I heard you
no,
say
no, that. No, I sure didn't.
I'm going to sit back and
took
listen. Daniel, you handle this one.
It took me a few years to get past the cross-dressing stuff in my psyche, okay? So I know Mrs.
Why?
Doubtfire.
You came up with
I've
Flip Wilson.
That.
You came in the air of Flip Wilson.
I know, but there was something that just would not let me like vibe with that early on. I didn't say I didn't. I'm okay with it. I respect the work that he's put in, but
okay, that's all I want to hear you say. You don't have to say nothing else.
Yeah,
thank
no,
you.
No. I'm
thank you, Daniel, for handling that because he'd have never said it if he wasn't on the air. Thank you, Daniel.
Running a neutral facilitator on that one, did you, Finesse? Now,
hey,
when
I get Daniel on the show, I have to use him to my advantage because the rest of you.
I see. Now, I know what this movie sounds like because they're at the beach and they're at, they're not at Martha's Vineyard, but they're someplace on the coast, and it's a wealthy family. But Tina Gordon Chisholm, now she's penned screenplays like Drumline, ATL, Hustle and Flow, Something New, Hurricane Season. She's been around for a minute. This is her first time directing. She was asked about the comparison to Jumping the Broom, and she says, you know, it's really different. Our family in Peoples is wealthy. In Jumping the Broom, they're wealthy also. We have about 8,000 movies of us in the projects, and nobody says, hey, I saw that hood movie before. I feel like people need to get used to seeing us in all aspects of life. And that is from the director. I have much respect for her.
Well, you know, the white people are comparing it to the Ben Stiller, Robert De Niro movie.
Meet the Parents, or something like that.
And I've already seen the comments from some white folks saying, well, why can't black, and this is, I've just seen it today, why can't black folks get their own storyline? People are saying they're going to see it because of, what's his name?
the actor. Yeah. So the comments, the and see, this is what we run up against. And then it goes back to going back to us. We have to support movies. I mean, if it's something ridiculous like Soul Plane, I'm not saying that. But when we have a movie that's neutral or a good movie or a buyer, we need to go see these movies to support. Because we'll, in a minute, how many of us see Meet the Parents? See, it was Meet the Parents, then Meet the Falkers. It was three of them, and we've all went to see them.
Right, and the reason, one of the reasons I'm doing this story is because I want to support her. Like, the trick is she's been involved in helping out on writing, I think, on The Cosby Show. She's been around for a minute. She's really young, but she's been around even doing that kind of stuff, and she is pulling something off. They sold it. She and the other producer, Stephanie Allen, went to different producers. Tyler Perry came in later, and they asked her about what was Tyler Perry's influence, and she said pretty much Tyler Perry gave us the green light. It was a win-win, and Tyler Perry's influence is just not even in there if you want to take it from that aspect. But they've done such a great job with Drumline and ATL and all those others. I don't think this is going to, you know, I think it can speak for itself. They're having these two women do this movie. Go ahead.
I do. What's the comedian's name? Is it Craig? What's his name? The star of the movie.
Yeah, Craig Robinson.
Craig Robinson. I think he's funny, and it's about time.
Yeah.
But a lot is riding on this. And what's going to be amazing is they're going to hang on Tyler Perry, and he had nothing really to do but executive produce. So
why would
it's
they
the
hate
same
on Tyler
thing.
Perry?
Well, because you know how people hate on Tyler Perry. There are people that hate on Tyler Perry.
Well, depending if it's good or bad, is that what you're saying? If it's good or bad, they're going to hate on him.
Or they're already not going to go see it because they already have this like for Tyler Perry. They're like, people didn't go see Temptations, even though it made a lot of money, because other people went to see it. So it ended up being good, but you had so many people that just dogged it before it even came out. It's, you know,
right.
For Color Girls. Or not Color Girls, I take that back. Precious.
Yeah.
No one else will pick up the film. He executive produced it. He had really nothing to do with it, but people are like, why did he put out this movie? I mean, he gets dumped on, good or bad, for no reason other than he knows how to get films out there and a certain message to a certain crowd. If you don't like it, then stick with the Spike Lees or the John Singletons or whoever. But we should be sticking to all of them if they're good at entertainment films, because I know a bunch of black folks that go see some ignorant stuff.
And that would be not a black on black crime by Finesse. Hey, Daniel, how come you didn't come and give some balance to Finesse? I'm just joking.
Because he agreed.
That was a black on black.
Well, I mean, Tyler Perry is, well, when Tyler Perry has gotten as big as he is, you're going to have haters. We just have this thing about self-hatred. You know, you don't hear people hating on some of the white moguls in the industry, but we want to tear down our own. I mean, the man has come from nothing and made an empire, but for whatever reason, people can't just, you know, laud him and praise him for what he's done. That's unfortunate for our people. That's my standpoint on it.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, I am probably the biggest Spike Lee fan that there is. But even he was wrong. You don't attack. If you got a problem, you should go see each other. You know how they use this in the media. He should have went to go see Tyler Perry. I would love to see them two work on something, a movie together, because I think with Tyler's marketing and the way he does stuff, but with Spike's direction, I think they can make one heck of a movie. Will it happen? I hope so, but I don't know. But they're both successful. I don't understand why we can't. That's like Francis Coppola saying, I made Godfather, which was better than Casino. That's a whack Italian movie. You don't never see Italians going at each other in a business. They might do it behind closed doors. So why do we got to have that?
Well, I think back in the olden days, long back in the days when you had the Warner Brothers and some of those other guys, they probably had a little competition. But I think Spike was the man for so long. You know, John Singleton was kind of like maybe his baby brother in comparison in the industry, because he didn't make nearly the impact. But you have somebody like Tyler Perry coming in and just taking over. I think Spike's his feelings are hurt.
Well, his feelings can be hurt all he wants. He's staying in his lane.
Right, well, but Spike normally stays in his lane, too. And so that's all, you know, we're not going to commit a black-on-black crime again on Spike. Cause, you
oh,
know,
I'm never going to commit a black-on-black crime on
oh,
Spike.
I know you don't. I know you don't.
Never
but,
that.
That is the thing. We can be critical without it being a black-on-black crime. I'm not against that. And like I said, I wasn't a big Tyler Perry fan. I have a lot of respect for him, but I don't believe in hating on Tyler Perry for the sake of hating on him. We could be critical,
no,
but we can't just
we should
hate
be,
on him.
We, you know what? We should be happy because here this man is. He didn't give up the rights of his stuff. He's doing it his way. He got Lionsgate.
Oh, no doubt.
Lionsgate was a small distribution company. People were brushing him off. Tyler has kept them and made them so much money that they give him an inch, a yard, or whatever it is to do what he wants to do. So now he's able to bring in this movie People produced by another black person to get them in the door, and that's what it's supposed to
and
be.
And talking about major media, Lionsgate is not an American company; it's a British company, right? So
say it again.
No American companies ever give black people that much power. So speaking of Lionsgate, I do have a Lionsgate story. Lionsgate and Code Black are teaming up to release Kevin Hart's next film. Let me
Cold
explain
black
this summer is coming out July 3rd. And now they recently stuck another deal with Kevin Hart's next film called Quick and Easy. That's Lionsgate. They said, the CEO of Lionsgate said, since the success of his two stand-up movies that were Lionsgate, Code Black Entertainment stuff, they've been seeking Kevin Hart out to get him a picture deal, and Lionsgate gave it to him. Now, where is Warner Brothers, Paramount, and all those other fools? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Because they know. Because when you have power now, Kevin Hart made what did he say? He made $8 million.
Yeah, he made $8 million off his last one.
It's just a stand-up. It set records. It broke records. Lionsgate does it the right way, and that's perfect. I tell folks all the time, look who you deal with.
I said Lionsgate is seeing green, not black.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Lionsgate is seeing green, not black. And the issue is just generally is saying that Lionsgate, when it comes to American companies, we really have to go outside of the borders to even get some kind of equity. We're still talking about cutting deals, people, and we still have to go into foreign countries' companies to get something. Now, before I end out of the program, I want to say producer Stephanie Allen and Tina Gordon Chisholm from Peoples just did this movie with Lionsgate, Tyler Perry. They have just sold, and it's just been announced, sold to Sony Pictures, according to Deadline Online, a movie thriller entitled Inheritance. Now, this story centers around young female lawyer handling the case of New Orleans coffee magnate who death ignites a chain of deadly events. So that movie is coming out. So just wanted to make sure I kind of put that out there, that they have already signed their next deal. So go check out Peoples.
Yeah, because the word is Peoples is funny. The word on the street, I haven't seen the premiere yet. Hopefully I'll be seeing it soon.
Yeah, and you know how that goes. Like you said, people may hate from a distance because they haven't seen it. But
I ain't mad, Tyler Perry. I need you to make a movie on me.
No. Tyler Perry needs to make a movie about you. So I'm not going to even go through that. You said with you or about you. Which one is
he
that?
Make it about me? Tyler Perry can make a movie with me. Spike Lee can do the movie about me. How about that? And I do I will do my first interview with Arsenio. How about that?
He makes sure he gets everybody in there. That's kind of how he does.
And folks, Arsenio Hall, September 2013, coming to a TV station near you.
Hey, I know. And go check out that show. I'll definitely be plugging that one in there when our single comes out. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. I don't know what's up with the board. We've been having some technical difficulties.
You know why what's happening with the board? We ain't crossed the line.
It might have been the commission. She may have just tampered with that. So we'll just go on something else a little funkier for Black on Black Crime. Now, you can join us next week, same time, same place, 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern for Black on Black Crime on S3 Radio. You're listening to Jerome, Finesse, and Daniel. We'll check you guys out next week. Peace out, people. Hey, I don't hear you, Finesse. I just want to make sure y'all was all right. Daniel?
Peace out. Have a great week. Was a friend of mine.
I don't think that's what the song was, Daniel.
I have one other thing to say. Ain't nobody scared of the commish. How about that one to end the show on?
All right, well, being that she dropped out of there a minute ago, I guess you don't have to be scared of her.
That's right.
All right.
Make that into a drop.
Hey, you got it. Hey, would you like one too, Daniel? No, we can't throw him in there. See, that would be a black on black crime. No, don't even fall for it. All right, we'll check y'all again next week.
Come to the dark side, Daniel. Come to the dark side.